You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. The Daily Racing Podcast from William Hill.
And they're off.
Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Third festival win and the biggest one today.
Or subscribe via iTunes by searching William Hill Podcasts in the music store.
Hello and welcome along to the William Hill Racing Podcast. We're going to look ahead to Monday's action on this edition. You'll hear it all live on Racing Radio from 12:25pm with Luke Elder, Gary Capewell and John Budden in the studio. Two national hunt meetings, Ayr and Hereford. And we've also got racing on the all-weather poly track at Chelmsford City as well. So three meetings to come, plenty to get stuck into. My name is Mark Walton and joining me in the studio is Mr. Rory DeLaghi. How are you, Rory?
I am very well, thanks, Mark.
Good, good man. Haven't seen you for a while.
No, it's been a while.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Bit of news, big news actually on Sunday as we record this, Rory, that Coney Gree will not take his place in the lineup for the King George VI chase at Kempton on Boxing Day. Sarah Bradstock, who rides him at home, said that he wasn't really sparkling in his work and they didn't want to risk it. So, right decision?
Yes, I suppose so. I mean, only they know. But what I will say is that there are plenty of... There's been plenty of scenarios in the past where horses have been due to run in big races and nothing's been heard about their participation until late in the day and people are back in the Mandy Post. And, you know, that works for some trainers. There was a couple of Cheltenham Festival winners for Willie Mullins back in March where everything was fine with them beforehand. And then after they won, Ruby Walsh said, I was worried about this because it hasn't been working well.
Yeah.
And you thought, well, that's the kind of information you wouldn't mind getting, but it would change the shape of the race. Of course, if you say the horse hasn't been working well and then it wins, then people think you've been put away.
Yeah.
But fair play to them. They've made a decision. You know, no sooner is the horse disappointed in his work than they've taken him out of the race. They haven't. And they've done that in the past. There've been scenarios where the horse, they said he was mooted to make his return Coney Gree at Wetherby. And they said, well, he's only in the Wetherby in case, you know, we're looking for soft ground. We're more likely to get it at Haydock. But, you know, we would consider Wetherby if the ground was going to come right. He was left in at the 5-day stage, but then immediately taken out of the race. They didn't even wait to declaration time. They didn't, you know, leave people thinking, well, he's still in the race, he might run.
Yeah.
They actually had him scratched from that race, which is very, very unusual. And I think they deserve credit for at least being as open as they are and as straightforward as they are in terms of the horse. So hopefully... It's just a minor setback, and he's back to his best in the spring.
Yeah, and he has had one or two problems in the past, so you can understand why they're being cautious rather than ending his season in the King George, effectively, because it all goes wrong. And
yeah, and of course, there's no £1 million bonus to be chased now.
No.
After Haydock anyway, and you know, that was a really punishing race. You know, you've been off the track for a long time, and whether that's left a mark, I don't know. I mean, the immediate post-race reports of him was that he came out of that race really well, but I guess you don't really find out until you give him a really serious piece of work, and he's not showing his sparkle for whatever reason. That doesn't sound like an injury, at least. So
no.
Hopefully it's just a temporary blip. And you know, the Gold Cup looked like a really, really interesting race. You know, a few months ago, and one or two of them falling by the wayside for various reasons now. And we could do with really competitive racing. For all this is good news for Colin Tizard.
Yeah, it is. We'll have a look at the betting for the King George in just a second. Just want to mention that intended targets now for Coney Gree will be either the Cotswold Chase at Cheltenham or the Denman Chase at Newbury. So,
well, see, that there's very interesting if he does run on one of those. That for me, if this crack was mine, that would be the race. Interestingly, the Denman Chase at Newbury is where Coney Gree first took on older horses or non-novices before he won the Gold Cup, and. If this crack was mine, he wouldn't be going for the King George. He would be going for either the Cotswold Chase or the Denman Chase to take on the Old Guard. And I would be looking to take Coney Gree on. It'd make a really interesting race. But you've got to give him a proper test before the Gold Cup. I think the King George is too early, quite frankly, for a raw novice. But end of January, middle of February is probably the ideal timing for it. So we'll see what Colin Tizard does.
Mm. King George betting looks like this: Q-Card 4-5, Thistlecrack 3-1, 7-1 Valsalido, T for 2, 8-1 Vroom Vroom Mag 9-1, 12-1 Jossie's Hill, who needs to be supplemented, 16-1 Outlander and Sub Lieutenant, and 25-1 or bigger prices for the rest. So Q-Card has gone odds on, unsurprisingly, I suppose. Thistlecrack, you've mentioned why you may run in the King George, why you maybe shouldn't run in the King George. Would you run him in the what used to be the Feltham, the Courtauld style?
I'd leave Kempton alone altogether, to be perfectly honest with you. There's no needs. There's no need for him to run in the Feltham. You know, it used to be a sounding board for potential RSA horses, but he's not going to go for the RSA in the first place. I would, you know, just to keep him taking over, give him a run anywhere over Christmas. He doesn't have to go right-handed at Kempton. It can be tricky around there, and horses can be found out. And while it could aid his development, I see no reason why you have to be locked into the notion of it's Kempton or nothing.
Yeah.
I don't think they would have thought about it, but Limerick or Leopardstown would have been an interesting place to go for him against some highly rated Irish novices. Mm. He wants a competitive race. And if he turns up in the Feltham, it might not be particularly strong in terms of numbers. And if he rocks up in the King George, I'm not sure I want to be taking on... Well, in fairness, it ends up looking a weak enough race, but there's no reason why he needs to be taking on Q-Card from the same yard, although you wouldn't want to be swerving Q-Card come the spring. With Thistlecrack, it's all about development. It's about finding the right races for him. And again, there's the potential of sacrificing that £1 million bonus that Q-Card's up for as well in this.
Yeah.
You don't want to cut your nose off to spite your face, so... It's an interesting race at the moment. It's difficult to know who's going to line up as it stands. Vroom Vroom Mag is the one that could be very interesting if she's sent there. But the problem you have betting Andy Post in any top-class race at the moment is wondering what Willie Mullins is going to do or not going to do. It can spoil the markets. I really like to see T for Two as an each-way prospect for this, but I think he's been very well found in the market now.
Yeah.
Given how much he's got to find on form, 8-1's a skinny price. He's obviously going to go for the race. He was a course and distance winner in the Feltham last year, and I thought he shaped tremendously well at Huntingdon. But the Huntingdon race, the Peterborough, is a much weaker race than this behind Joss's Hill. And it's a bit bonkers that you can back Joss's Hill at 12s and T for Two at 8s for this. Joss's Hill obviously needs to prove his stamina and isn't in the race yet. But I think he's more likely to be supplemented for the race now that Coney Gree's out. That pretty much makes him not a definite, but a very, very probable runner. So if the betting was the other way around, T for Two was 12s or 14s, I'd be interested in him. But as I said, I think he's just been well-found in the market. I think he'll run a really good race, but you can't really see him winning.
No.
Against, you know...
If Q-Card turns up.
If the big guns turn up, then, you know, something needs to go wrong for T for Two to win. So your angle for an each-way bet is now limited. And I think he ends up maybe drifting on the day, but he's still an interesting one place only, given that he's been prepared for the race. And, you know, it'll be a great story as well, but... That doesn't help you in terms of punting. You know, the fact that it's a good story doesn't get you an extra point.
No, I suppose not, no. In fact, it makes things shorter sometimes because a good story latch onto, don't they? Other festival markets and so on, just to talk about, the World Hurdle market changed quite a lot on Saturday. You know what I mean, Harry. Now favourite for the race at 2-1, ahead of Fohine, who's 4-1, 6-1 Nichols Canyon, Yanworth 8-1, 12-1 Little Rockefeller, and Vroom Vroom Mag 14s or bigger for the others. It's kind of hard to figure out which kind of horses in that lineup are going to turn up. You don't know what's going to happen with Nichols Canyon or Fohine or hardly any of them, but you do know this is the target for, you know what I mean, Harry.
Yeah, and he has to be favourite. He's going the same route as Thistlecrack went last year. I saw someone say, at a reasonable judge, say, oh, he needs to win this easily to justify the hype. He's the least hyped horse in history, isn't he? He's been on the go for two or three full seasons now. He was running in handicap hurdles for a full year for Helen Nelms. Before joining his current yard, and his first run for Harry Fry was in a conditional jockey's handicap hurdle at Cheltenham. So he's come a hell of a long way, and he does it with his heart in his sleeve. There's been no talk about him behind the scenes at all. He just keeps surprising people on the track. Someone pointed out to me yesterday that even when he won the Albert Bartlett at Cheltenham last year, he was actually dropped in the handicap for it.
Really?
I haven't checked the stats on that. I trust my source. But if it's wrong, that is his fault, not mine. You know who you are. The other horse to mention is the runner-up for that race, Lil Rockefeller, who's just a tremendously likeable horse. Proved his stamina for the extended 3 miles at Ascot, and clearly will stay the trip at Cheltenham as well. He ran perfectly well in the Champion Hurdle last year, but didn't quite have the toe for that. He's a horse who just keeps giving. You know, he's the first horse off the bridle in almost all his races, and he lost his place. Noel Feely riding for the first time yesterday, lost his place before halfway and was near the back of the field before staying on really strongly and going on well at the finish. He has to be going for the World Hurdle now, and 12-1's a fair each way price about him, because plenty of those who are shorter in the betting wouldn't be intended runners at this stage. Whereas I think connections of Lil Rockefeller must make the decision now that he is a World Hurdle horse through and through, and everything about him suggests that he'll race his game again at Cheltenham in March, and he's been an absolute star for Neil King and the partnership who owns him, Andy Smith, the major owner in him. And you know, every time he runs, he's written off, and he performs better. And although he gets beaten quite a lot, he gets beaten very gnarly by very good horses. And in the World Hurdle, it's not the most sexy race on the roster at Cheltenham. I think he'd run another good race, and he appeals at 12s.
Yeah. Every time I see him run, you seem to feel that he deserves a big prize, but he's just never quite getting there. There's always something to come and beat him, isn't there? But
it's usually flashier, speedier horses who beat him, and there won't be too many of those in the World Hurdle.
Mm. No, you're right. One of the horses just to quickly touch on before we move on. Death Duty won in Ireland on Sunday. 3-1 for the Albert Bartlett, 7-1 for the Neptune, and 11-4 to win any race at the festival. Any appeal there?
He'd want soft grind, I think, but he's a really likable horse with a big engine. He should have been favourite for the race today, to be honest. But the Willie Mullins runner,
Invitation only
had been reasonably impressive in a weaker race than his previous start, and represented the team who'd won the race three times in the last 5 years, Graham Wiley and Willie Mullins. And I think everyone kind of decided that he must be the appointed one on that. But he was a bit disappointed. But his jumping's not great, and his head carriage isn't terrific either. And Death Duty is just the opposite. He was a little bit clumsy once or twice, but he's a real chasing type, big, strong, powerful, and he'd be better over a fence. So I think he might end up coming up short at Cheltenham in March, but he'd be more of a force when he jumps fences. He reminds me a bit of No More Heroes, who was sadly lost for the yard at the festival last year, but he's just going to get better with time.
Okay. We'll leave that there anyway. That's a little bit of an anti-post chat, if you like. Let's get stuck into things a little closer to hand. We've got plenty of racing coming up on Monday, and Rory's going to give us his bets in three of the day's races.
William Hill Racing Radio. It's everything to give you the inside track.
Right, we picked out the best of the action on Monday, and we start at Hereford in the 135, which is a Class 4 mares handicap hurdle. 3 miles, the extended 3 miles and 1 furlong. Is the trip here. We've got a field of 8 of them to go to post. Rory, and I imagine we'll have a relatively short price favourite here, Miss Maiden Over, who arrives here chasing the hat-trick.
I thought she had plenty to find, to be perfectly honest with you. I mean, it was a non-event she won at Catterick last time out. It was a two-horse race on paper, and the favourite got kicked at the start and was withdrawn. So Miss Maiden Over, he went off 6-4 in the end. That was essentially like 1-20 after the, something very short after the Rule 4. So it ended up not being an awful lot of, a particularly strong race, and she won it easily, but it was a nothing contest, and she needs to improve again to win this. She's clearly going the right way, and she may well improve again to win this. And she was a winner at Ayr prior to that in a maiden, but this is deeper, and it does require her to improve. So if she was going to be a short price, I mean, what price did she put in? 5-4 in the tissue there? I think that's completely wrong. To be honest, I would fear her. You know, she definitely has a chance, but I don't think she deserves to be a clear favourite at all on the form that she's shown. On the improvement that she has, yes, you'd put her towards the head of the market, but if she was 5-4, I'd be against her all day long. Hubali Diva is an interesting one. She was second to a decent type in No Hassle Hoff at Hereford last time out, so her ability to handle the track is proven. The winner of that race is considerably better than any of these. So the fact that she was well beaten in the end is not something to be too concerned about. And I think she'll run a half-decent race. And I'm going to take a chance at one that I think is going to be a big price. And that is Sahara Hayes for Philip Dando and Conor Orr. Philip Dando's horses all tend to come from the same family. This is out of the mare Gypsy Hayes, who's been applying her trade for the family over the years. And most of them are by Rainbow High, who stayed all day on the flat, and his offspring over hurdles are just slow but keep going, and they all want 3 miles plus. And Sahara Hayes has been campaigned around 2 to 2.5 miles, and she's looked ordinary and she's looked fairly slow, but she steps up and trip to a what would have been 3.75 miles in the old days at Hereford, remeasured as 3 miles 1.5 furlongs. But the extra distance could just bring improvement out of her. And to be honest, she ran perfectly respectably in a maiden hurdle at Fosse Lass on her latest start. That wasn't a bad contest. She finished midfield, but you know, she wasn't at all disgraced, and she was held up off the pace that day and made late ground in a race that wasn't run at a particularly strong gallop. So I think she's probably a little bit better than that suggests as well. Her overall form is very ordinary, but as I said, I think there's a decent chance of her improving. She comes from a very unfashionable yard, though, so no one's going to really pick into that, and I think she ends up potentially being one of the outsiders of the party. She should be double-figure odds, and in an open race, I'm happy to take a chance on her at what I hope will be a big price.
Yeah, potentially a big price one then there in the 135 at Hereford Sahara Hayes. Moving on to the 240 at Hereford. Next, this is a Class 3 handicap hurdle. 2 miles is the trip for this one. We've got a field of 9 to go to post here. Rory, who do you like in there?
A couple caught my eye. First of all, Oscar Tia, who's having his second start for Neil Mulholland. A promising horse in his younger days for Anthony Honeyball. And then spent time with Peter Bowen as well. The owners tend to move their horses around between those yards. Had become a little bit disappointing. Looked a little bit lazy or disinterested in his races and a couple of starts for Peter Bowen. But ran better on his debut for Neil Mulholland in February. Hasn't been seen since. Still didn't look entirely in love with the game, it has to be said that day. Did hang and look a difficult ride. But he's now been with Neil for a concerted period of time. And the one thing you have to say about Neil Mulholland's horses is the vast majority of them look really straightforward. Mm. You know, they run straight as a gun barrel. They you know, they tend to travel very strongly in their races. And they're very reliable. And while Oscar Tia wouldn't be the type that you would trust implicitly for his old yard, I would give Neil a chance of turning him around. Yeah. So he would have a decent chance. I suspect he'd be well backed on the day. But the one that I just favoured was the potentially very well handicapped Stamp Your Feet. This is a decent horse in bumpers, placed at Sutherland his debut and then won at Fontwell back in April. He's had 2 runs over hurdles and he hasn't jumped brilliantly either time. He's finished second at Stratford, then third at Bangor. Now finishing placed in 2 hurdle races entitled due to a handicap mark. And I think it's interesting that Tom George is going down the handicap route with this horse. If you look at the form of the race he ran in at Bangor, he was third to Winterlude and One More Go. One More Go would have won off a mark of 130 a couple of starts ago. Unfortunately, he took a fatal fall on his last start at Chepstow. He was coming to win a decent race there. He was rated 130. He was 5 lengths in front of Tom George's horse, Stamp Your Feet, that day. And you got the impression that Stamp Your Feet would have finished a lot closer had he jumped more fluently. Now, he gets into this handicap debut off a much lower mark. He's in of 112. And I think, you know, on the collateral form of that race, Winterlude is a horse who win races over hurdles this winter as well. I think he's one to watch out for. So off 112, a horse who showed above average ability in bumpers and gets in here off bottom weight, I think he's a bit of a standout in terms of handicapping potential. So hopefully he'll jump. And that's obviously a worry given that he was a little bit ragged. But that tends to be the way with Tom George, bumper horses going over hurdles for the first time anyway. And he's had time to be schooled and learn from his experiences. So it shouldn't be a long-term issue.
No.
And I don't know what kind of price he's going to be. Hopefully a backable price. But he certainly appeals off that mark.
Yeah. And you've got a real informed team there as well. Tom George and Adrian Heskin had a very good Saturday, didn't they, between them? And they're going great guns.
Yep. Except when I back them, obviously. But.
3 o'clock at Ayr is where we finish. This is a Class 3 handicap hurdle. 2 miles and 5 furlongs the trip for this one. 6 runners to go to post. And we've got some interesting runners in there. The likes of Big River and Lochdurg Walk are going to take quite a bit out of the market, I think, here. Rory, what do you make of the race?
Yeah, hard to know what to expect of Lochdurg Walk. He's been off the track for quite a long time. He won an Irish point before joining Don McCain, was beaten out of sight on his debut, but then won both starts over hurdles. Quite impressive in the first of those, eventually, having had to work very hard to get into the race. He's then pulled clear on the run-in to win at Bangor. He rather scraped home on his next start when he was a very short price at Catterick and hasn't been seen since. The form of his races is difficult to dig into, and it's, you know, he's off a mark of 125 here after a long absence, and it's hard to know what to expect of him. So I much preferred Big River, who's clearly had issues of his own, In that he made his hurdles debut at Kelso in October last year, and then a second start over hurdles was at the same meeting a year later. So he won his maiden, and then he was a good second in a handicap off the same mark as today's, keeping on well behind Cool Barranca. Again, that form looks solid enough. We know a lot about the horses who ran in that race, are established handicappers, and it looks solid form. The interesting thing about that race was that he hit a bit of a flat spot and then stayed on. He steps up and trip, which should suit. But he also has a tongue tie on, and I wonder why the reason he hit the flat spot might have been just because he swallowed his tongue or made a noise and then got over that and finished strongly. So the tongue tie could actually be a big benefit to him. And it may well be that we didn't get anywhere near the bottom of him on his last start. Again, his form in bumpers is very sound. He was a good second on his debut in bumpers and then won a half-decent bumper at Kelso on his second start. And on the basis of that bumper form, he should be better than 115 horse over hurdles, and I suspect he's another one who's well handicapped. You could argue that the tongue tie is a negative, but I think given that he actually saw the race out quite well at Kelso, just giving me the impression that maybe he's partly swallowed his tongue, or he just made a bit of a gurgling noise and has then seen it out, and the tongue tie actually should help in that regard. And in a race where you wouldn't say that too many are absolutely guaranteed to run the race. A lot of these are coming back from absences. Top Billing's not been running particularly well recently. He's had a few recent runs, but nothing special. Lothar Watt's coming back from a long absence. Pistol's coming back from a fair time off and from a yard that doesn't have a good record at getting them fit after a break either. Little Glen Shee is back from fences, probably needs a confidence builder. And First Domini's another one coming back from 450 odd days off. And first start for Mike Smith. So lots of questions for a few of these to answer, and I thought Big River looked to have a very good opportunity indeed.
Hmm. Actually, don't mind it when connections and when trainers add tongue ties. It's not the same. You know, when they put headgear on, you think, oh, they're not straightforward, or they're not getting quite what they should out of a horse because he's not concentrating or whatever. A tongue tie is just helping it breathe. You know, if he's made a bit of a noise.
Well, there's one or two
the
trainers.
Skeletons and stuff.
Yeah,
skeletons, anyway,
exactly, but. Yeah. It can only possibly benefit them.
Yeah.
So stick them on anyway, even if you don't know if they've got a wind problem, because you sometimes don't find out until the race. So having the tongue tied down will usually be a benefit. Every now and again, you'll get a horse who fights it, you know, who's uncomfortable, and then sort of throw their head around a little bit. But most horses will be fine with it, and therefore it's kind of a belt and braces job.
Yeah.
But it's certainly not a negative, as particularly in this case, I would say. So he looks a very solid bet.
All right. Good stuff then, Rory. Quick summary before you go. Let's just quickly confirm these selections. In the 135, you took a chance on Sahara Hayes, yeah?
Yeah, Sahara Hayes should be a big price and worth chancing up and trip.
Stompy Feet in the 240.
Looks very well handicapped off 112, and hopefully he'll jump.
And we just heard a case there for Big River in the 3 o'clock. So superb. Good stuff, Rory. Thank you very much. Good
Thanks
luck.
Very much
and enjoy it on Monday.
Cheers.
There you go. The thoughts of Rory Delaghi on Monday's racing. You'll hear it all live on Racing Radio from 12:25 PM. Luke Elder, Gary Capel, and John Budd and the team in the studio for the meetings at Ayr, Hereford, and Chelmsford City. So do tune in for all of that. Thank you very much for listening to this William Hill Racing podcast, and enjoy Monday's action.
ACCA 5 is William Hill's new ACCA insurance. It means if you have a 5 selection accumulator and one lets you down, you'll get your money back as a free bet. And it's available across all sports. ACCA 5, exclusive to William Hill. T's and C's apply.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.